That's a little more like it. And after how many years, Mr. Johnson?
44 years and 9 months.
Well, that's not bad. And what was your what were your duties when you retired, sir?
I was a shift boss in the coal plant, and then I went on relief general foreman.
Oh, now let's start at the beginning, sir, and find out where all this started. Where are you from? Where were you born?
I was born in Jackfish, Ontario. That's right on the shore of Lake Superior. Lake Superior, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now, Jackfish. Now, what was the reason for being of Jackfish? Why was it there?
Well, my father worked in the coal docks for the CPR.
Right. What year were you born there?
I was born on April the 7th, 1909.
Now, Mr. Johnson, as we were getting ready for the show now, you told me an interesting story about Jackfish and a lady you met there and a plaque in the park or something out there. What was that story?
Well, we were coming home from B.C., and this lady was kidding me about where is Jackfish when we come around Lake Superior, and we happened to come on to the rest area, and here was this plaque commemorating the time that the Army camped in Jackfish when they were controlling the Indians in the West, and they had camped in Jackfish.
Well, now, that must have been back to the time of the Red River, or at least the Riel Rebellion, or something like that. It must have been there.
It would be, yes.
Right. Well, now, what was the population of Jackfish when you grew up there?
Well, I couldn't tell you that part of it, but I understand there was only a few houses.
Right. Is it still there and still
that's
doing
business? That's what they tell me. Tell me it's there. I couldn't find it, but they say it's there.
I think we can all find Jackfish on the map. But you you were moved with your family quite early from Jackfish, right? Where to?
Sudbury.
Now, just one little thing and another thing you told us about that I found interesting. I told you that you had Angus, a Scotch name, and Johnson, a sort of a Swedish name. And what were you, half Scotch and half Swedish or something? Now, what was your explanation for that?
Well, no. There no, you didn't have the T in our name, and there used to be an E on the end of it, and my mother dropped that years ago, so. Which actually is John Stone.
John Stone at one time, and it's.
Now it's John Stone.
It's Jansson.
John
Swedish, eh?
Yes, we, Jansson is Swede, yeah.
Like, my name is Jan Jansson. I come from Wisconsin, eh?
Jarle Jansson.
Right. And to all our Swedish listeners, we're just having a little fun.
Right.
Just kidding here, eh?
I have some good Swedish friends.
Right. Now, where did you live in around here when you came to Coppercliff or Sudbury, sir?
We moved to Coppercliff when I was 3 years old, and we lived up at Clarabelle. Now that is right up where the North Mine is now. And there were houses on both sides of the street, and our house was right up on the top of the hill.
Well, then, as you'd go to public school right up in that area, eh?
Well, no, the public school is where it is today.
In Coppercliff,
yeah.
Well, now, tell us a little bit about the early days growing up around, 11 or 12 or 13 in there. What'd you do? Play hockey? Run sheep run like the rest of the kids or what?
Oh, yeah, we played cowboys and Indians, but we lived up in Fairbell there for about a year or two, and then we moved down to Finland Street, and there was nothing there at the time. Well, it was a house, all right, but we used to get our water from across the street on a standpipe. And the roads weren't paved, and after a rainstorm, we used to just go out and slide in the mud in our bare feet. And then, during the war, 1914-18 war, the Bernese butcher in Coppercliff at the time, which is now Pianosi's, he used to bring the second box of meat down and exchange at our house with the other horse. And most of the time I would get on with him, and we'd go up to the old smelter, which is way up by the slag pile. And that was a great activity, and just driving somebody's horse, that's what I liked. And then we used to get on Mr. Terrio's stagecoach. He had the stagecoach that ran to the CPR station to meet the trains. And we would ride the back step when he didn't know it.
I think maybe that beats watching the television all the time, eh?
Oh, yes, that's better than your cowboy and Indians of today. Yeah, no shooting, man.
Well, now, tell me, Mr. Johnson, some of the people, some of the boys and girls that you went to school with back in those days, you were telling me about some of them. Was there Mrs. Richardson?
Mrs. Richardson, yes. She was Margaret Light before she was married, and they lived down the hill below us in Clarabel. And I was shoving her in the carriage one day to meet her father running down the hill, and the carriage upset. And rather than scratch the handle of the carriage, I put my fingers at my hand underneath the carriage, and I still have the scars on my fingers.
Well, I can see them, and that was a real gallant gesture.
I saved the carriage, but I lost my skin off my fingers.
Was there a gesture?
And then there's Alec Cosgrove and Barney Hamilton and Jesse Menzies, Margaret Menzies. They're still in Sudbury. I've seen them the other day.
Uh-huh. Now, another thing, and I've heard this before, a lot of the people who went to that school, and I've talked to one or two of them on this show, had a great respect for the principal, Mr. McPhail.
Tell me
something about him.
He was quite the man, and when Mr. McPhail said spoke to you, you said, yes, sir, you didn't. And he was a firm believer in the strap, and he kept discipline. Boy, you didn't play around with him. As today, you see the kids all live near there now, and the kids, they cut the corner and go through the park. We would never do that when Mr. McPhail was there.
It's a little different. I mean, today we have groups or organizations saying that you must not be stern with the kids. You must not use the strap or anything. You don't go along with that thinking, eh?
No, I don't. I believe their idea today is spare the rod and spoil the child, and they're doing to make it a good job of it.
I think, Mr. Johnson, that there are many, many who will agree with you. But getting back to those early days again, this was sort of a little village you lived in there. Do you remember any of the mayors or anybody like that?
Well, George Craig and Mr. Waterbury, they're the earlier ones. I can't remember any ahead of that.
Well, another memory, Barney, you have is of a school burning down. Now, what was that story?
Well, that was quite a fire that Sunday morning, and the team that pulled the horse-drawn fire wheels, they were down on Evans Road plowing out for a funeral. And they had to come all the way back uptown and pick up the fire wheels and go to the fire. By that time, it was too late.
And this was a pretty fair-sized school that burned down.
Yes, there was about 12, 15 rooms in it. And it happened to be that one of our entrance teachers was my neighbor after I was married, so I kept up relationships.
Right. Well, what did the kids do after the fire? What did the parents arrange?
After the fire, they made temporary schools in the basement of the churches, and then there was an old school there where the dairy is now, and they had them all the different, each of the different churches and halls that few classes, and that's I went to the Lutheran Church on Poplar Street.
Now, another memory you have, Barney, very vivid because you were a child, of course, was the Rex Theater burning down, right?
Yeah, I remember that well. That happened on a Saturday night, and that Rex Theater was on Market Street where Tom Crowther's house is today. And I remember that quite well because that was real dandy fire, and I knew the guy who was looking after the stoves. It was put a little extra heat on at home, and the stove pipes fell down.
Well, now, speaking of theaters and whatnot, Mr. Johnson, by the way, neighbors, we're chatting today with Mr. Angus Johnson, who retired in April 1971 after 44 years and 9 months with Inkle, at which time he was a shift boss and relief general foreman. And now, Mr. Johnson, getting back to theaters and being a kid and everything, tell us about, did you not work your way into the theaters on Saturday mornings or something?
Oh yes, we used to peddle bills, we'd hand bills around town, let them know what was coming off, and then we'd get in the theater for free. I thought that was all right.
Well now, what memories have you of some of what you used to see on those Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon matinees?
Well, Charlie Chaplin in them days was a prize picture, but Tom Mix and different cowboy stories we used to take an interest in, too.
Right. So,
yeah.
It would be a sort of a, almost like serials today, to carry on from week to week, eh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now, I gather now that after you finished school, you went to work for Mr. C.H. Perry. Now, that's a very familiar name to me because you're about the third person I've talked to who knew Mr. Perry or actually worked for him. But the thing that intrigues me is this horse, Blackie. Tell us about Blackie the horse.
Blackie's name was Duke. He was a real wild guy. He wasn't wild, but he was an arrogant sort of a guy, and you had to gain his friendship. And if you treated him right, he'd treat you right. And Mr. Perry, he always insisted that you look after your horse. We weren't allowed to have a whip or a dog on our cart with us. And as long as you look after your horse, Duke was a good fellow. And Mr. Perry says that any time that Duke wanted anything, he had to have it, no matter what it was. So between Duke and I, we did all right.
I guess you got a lot of raisins and things like that.
Oh, yes, nuts and raisins. He liked them, and so did I.
Somebody told me that when Duke felt that he needed a new pair of horseshoes, he used to go and knock on the door, kick the door of the blacksmith shop.
He'd go in the blacksmith, Ablight of the blacksmith shop. He knew where he was going. He could leave him any place, and he'd find his way back home again. But he always had one of the fancy trots on him there. Brings his front feet up there, you know. And my biggest trouble with him was that my mother used to feed him when I'd go home for my morning snack, and I'd leave him a couple of streets over, and I'd come out to get him, he'd be at home, so I'd have to walk home to get him.
Now, I gather that some joker, and I use the word rather loosely here, gave Duke an onion instead of an apple, and Duke was a little unhappy about
that. Right, he chased him into the post office in Coppercliff.
I don't blame him.
Well, that guy has the same name as I had. He knows him. He's gone now. But
he's gone, eh? I guess he did this for a gig, but too bad that old Duke didn't get a chance to build him at least a couple, eh?
Right. He was a great horse.
Duke was the pride of Coppercliff.
Right? That's right. That's right. Everybody respected him.
Well, Mr. Johnson, long may the memories of Duke or Blackie live, because he certainly was one of the characters of the era. But you worked for a time for Mr. Perry, but you got discharged. You got fired by Mr. Perry because you delivered a load of manure or something, right?
Yeah, well, Mr. McKean, he used to be the cellar boy, fill the potatoes and look after the fire and the horses and stuff. So he wanted a load of manure for his water pipe. And Harry had just bought new delivery wagons, and Mr. McKean wanted a load of manure to cover his water pipes, so I was a good fella, and I took him up a load of manure after hours one night, and C.H. Perry was in Coppercliff that night, and that was the end of my grocery story.
I'm not sure that I blame Mr. Perry, do you?
Well,
do you know?
No.
This was in his new wagon that you delivered the manure,
right? In the new wagon.
Well, I've got to go along with Mr. Perry. However, this led to you looking around, and you got a job then with Inkle, right?
Yeah, I got Inkle.
What year was this?
April the 1st, 1926.
And I think that the pay was pretty high about that time, the hourly rate.
Oh, yes, real high. 42 cents an hour I got when I first started.
What sort of work were you doing, Mr. Johnson?
Well, we were unloading cars of sand in the converter building in the wintertime, and that was no prize job, breaking the chunks.
I guess not, but you've survived pretty well.
Oh, yes.
You're as healthy-looking individual as I've seen in a while.
This environment business and the pollution, well, it didn't bother me any, so... And then after the spring, when the sand got better, I was sent to whitewash the fence. There used to be a high-board fence all around the smelter, and a bunch of us young guys had to go whitewash the fence. And then when we were done with that, I got a job with Joe Workman in the Reverb, and I ended up with him as the running the crane, and then I went to the ball mill.
Now, you're going a little too fast for me here, Mr. Johnson. I got a note here about you. Yeah, you went to the ball mill, that's right.
Yeah.
And then, did you not then transfer to the coal plant, right?
Yes, after the new smelter was built. That's just ball mill and crane business. That's in the old other smelter, the old smelter.
Right.
And then the new one was built, I was sent to the coal plant. And I ended up a shift boss in the coal plant. And it is now not operating anymore. And I am the last of the originals in the new coal plant.
Well, there you are, friends. There we have it. And you have it right from the lips of somebody who knows. Then, you moved in later, did you not then work after the coal plant between the copper reverb and the roasters around in there?
Well, while I was in the coal plant, then they had a new system, and I went on swing relief from copper reverb, coal plant, roasters, and relief general foreman.
Now, Mr. Johnson, you also, around about this time, took an interest in first aid. Is that right?
Well, yes.
Did you win a Parker Shield? I think it was back around when? Was it 49 or thereabouts?
Yeah, I won the Parker Shield in 1949. I was captain of the team in 1949 when we won the Parker Shield.
And some other awards that you picked up?
I got the gold certificate in 1955, and then I was involved, wasn't involved with it, but I was associated with an accident in which a lady from Carpetcliff got her legs cut off of the streetcar in 1942, and I got a citation from the Governor General for that.
Oh, very nice. Have you got that framed up on the wall somewhere, I hope?
Yes, I have. I haven't got it on the wall, but I got it framed.
Right. That would be somebody with both legs cut off. That would be a sort of a shocking.
Well,
you were faced with a real problem, right there, right?
I don't know. Everybody says that I was mixed up. Well, any time there was an accident in the reverb there, our general foreman, Charlie Byers, used to always call me. And I went down one time, and the guy got both legs caught in a screw conveyor. And we had to pull him out of there, and his legs were just like rope. And then when I finished that, I went back up to dinner, and Charlie came up, and he went and told somebody, I was eating my dinner, and Charlie said, that guy's not human.
You know, Angus, if things had been different, maybe medicine would have been for you, eh? You never know. I think you might have liked to study medicine then.
Well, that stuff doesn't bother me.
Well, it's just the way it goes in the world.
Yeah.
But now, I know, Mr. Johnson, that since your retirement, you've done a good deal of traveling. Tell us about where you've been, how many times, things like that.
Well, we were down to Florida 3 or 4 times, and we just traveled from coast to coast on that end, and of course that didn't take you very long anyway. And we went to Barbados and Grenada, California, BC, and Hawaii.
Now let's take these things in order. What are your views on Florida?
Well, Florida's all right, but you can see the same thing here in Sudbury, buildings, and I don't play golf, and nothing unusual that I can see about Florida except the weather, and well, I have even gone as far. I have a lot down there, so I don't know. I don't think I'll ever use it.
I ask these questions because there may be people listening who are thinking about traveling. You know, I wanted to. What do you like, the East Coast or the West Coast down there, or do you have?
I like the Gulf side.
The Gulf side, eh?
Yeah.
Where were you in California?
We went to San Francisco. And that's a good place to go, San Francisco, ride the cable car, that's very exciting. And, the whole shebang there, up in the mountains. And
do you, you've not thought of living permanently in California, though, eh?
No. My favorite spot is Grenada. I would go to Grenada anytime.
Well, now, first of all, where is Grenada?
Well, Grenada is a little island below Barbados, and you go down there, you take the big plane to Barbados, and you get on a smaller plane and go to Grenada.
Now, sir, as we were getting ready for the show here, you told me, I saw a great yarn about some lady down there who, I don't know whether she ran the motel you were at, about how you got to the Governor General's, or Lieutenant Governor, or whatever, his residence or something. Now, what was that yarn?
Well, this lady, she ran a boutique in the hotel, and she came out and said she was supposed to invite people down to the Governor General's lawn party for charity. And it was going to cost us $15 a couple, but don't pay him, pay her. So we did that. and they were supposed to pick us, she was going to take us down, and about 20 minutes after the set time, the guy from the store came out and he says, Gloria won't be here to pick you up. I will have to drive you down. So he drove us down. And we had a very good time. And incidentally, I got the signature of the Governor General. And Eric is a very nice guy, but he's very bossy. He's going to run the show. And we had a very good afternoon. Everything was supposed to have been paid, but we had to buy our own booze. And so then we were ready to leave. And there was another people that this Gloria had picked up. And it happened to be Mrs. Hershey and her party.
Hershey, are we talking Hershey chocolate bars at
right,
this time?
That's
oh,
right.
Right?
And she was a very nice lady anyway, and they had their yacht there. So anyway, she drove Mrs. Hershey and her party back home, and we said we'd take a taxi. Oh, no, wait for us. So we waited for her, and when they come back to drive us home, and then they got the hotel, it cost her $30 instead of $15. So we learned.
We learned if there's a moral, I guess it's keep your wits about you, eh?
When she was driving us back to the hotel, she took us to show she's building a hotel. She had a taxi stand, a car rental, and two or three boutiques in the city, in the town.
This gal is going to become quite a weak wheeler.
She's doing all right by herself. But we tried that up to experience.
Right. Now, Mr. Johnson, we have not talked about, although I asked you earlier about you. Do you have a brother and sister?
Yes, I have a brother and a sister.
Where are they, and what are they doing now?
Well, my sister, she is a widow now, and she lives in Cornwall, and my brother and his wife, they live in London. But right now, they're both on a world's cruise, 13 weeks, which is very nice.
I could take a little bit of that, eh?
I could too, but I haven't got the money to do it. So.
Maybe not, but I don't think you're suffering very much for some
time. I get three meals a day.
Yes, you do better than that too.
Yeah.
you spend holidays at Granada and in Hawaii, as
right.
I understand it, eh?
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is for a young fellow who started work at 14 or whatever, you haven't done too badly, eh, in your view?
No, I think I've looked after myself very well, and all associates.
I think so. Now, would it be fair to say that the company's been very good to you? Would you say that?
Oh, yes, I got no grief for the company at all. At times, they're going rough, but that's part of the business, and not their fault. And tell you a little story of
tonight.
When we were kids, my father used to work at O'Donnell. That's where the old wolf's beds were. And my mother and father would stay at Bob Bryson's house, and my brother and I would sleep at Tommy Ellis's house, and my mother would come up in the morning and take us back in our pajamas to stay with them for the day. And we'd have to feel the sidewalk to find our way back home in the sulfur smoke, and I'm still alive, so.
Yeah, and you've got a nice
That's
tan,
it.
I was going to say.
Yes.
Where did you pick up that tan, around here, or you've been...
No, not yet. I'm waiting for that one.
You're waiting for that one, eh? All right, now, next, Mr. Johnson, about your family. Do you have any family?
Yes, I was married to Eileen Arthur in 1931, and she passed away in 1965 in December. And then I remarried in 1957, and we have two children.
That would be 67, you remarried?
67, I mean.
Oh, yes. Oh, who are the children? Where are they? What are they doing?
Well, my son Jimmy, he's the eldest. He works in Toronto for the safety supply company. And
right.
My daughter, she's married to an Inco worker at Creighton, and they live in Walden.
Well, now, Mr. Johnson, we've had quite a story here. We're dating back 44 years and 9 months, right back to the days of living up in the little village up there, Clarabelle Mine and so on. Now, you've traveled, you've seen the world, and I mean you've seen it, as I say, from between the Caribbean to Hawaii. Incidentally, about the Rockies, where'd you go out there?
We went right through to Victoria.
What'd you think of that?
I liked it out there. And we were out there in June
mm-hmm.
last year.
How was June for traveling out there?
Well, there's lots of snow on the side of the mountain there, and on the roads, we snowbanks along the side there, but as far as traveling was concerned, it was all right, and lots of nice things to see. That butchered gardens out there, that's something worth seeing.
Right, right.
And,
the Rockies are an awe-inspiring sight.
Oh, yes, there's a big, long slope there. I forget how many miles the town run is, and there's two safety runoffs on it, so if your brakes fail, you can keep on going right straight through, and it'll stop you.
No, I'm going to tell a little story on myself here, which nobody believes, but which is true. I once was in Nelson, British Columbia, and I was loaned a car to travel to Trail, British Columbia. And I did very well on the, I had to go up halfway. You see, going down the other side, I found that the brakes were going on the car. And I literally would have to just let it go for maybe 50 or 60 yards and turn into the side of the bank and take a deep breath and then turn back and go another 50 yards. So I know what you mean. That's, you got to know what you're doing in driving through those mountains.
We went to stop. We stayed at Trail there overnight, and we went to the chalet where Nancy Green trained. But I didn't like the idea to climb a ladder to get upstairs into the... I guess they weren't made for tourists.
Now, one final thought here, Mr. Johnson, is simply this, that you were born in Jackfish. You grew up in Sudbury. You have seen Canada, the Caribbean, Hawaii, a good part of the United States of America. But Sudbury looks pretty good to you, right?
Oh, yes. Nothing wrong with Sudbury and Coppercliff. It's a very friendly town. There's nobody worried about anybody, and the different nationalities, they all associate. There's none of this racial stuff. Like in Coppercliff there, you can fly, happen to go uptown, and I forget some money. I just went to any one of the stores, except there's only one store I can't get credit in, and that's the liquor store.
I don't think too many of us get credit there. Although that's an idea.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody could get elected on that platform or something, eh?
This cashier would give me credit if she could, but she can't. So.
All right. Friends, our guest today, a most welcome guest on Memories of Music, has been Angus Johnson, who retired in April 1971 after 44 years, 9 months with International Nickel. He's quite a, you could call him an international nickel star. He started at the age of 18. He spent most of his working life with the company. He retired as a shift boss and a relief general foreman. I repeat, Mr. Johnson, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege to have you as our guest on Memories and Music.